Iris Samuels lives in Helena. She's a journalist covering Montana politics, but that's been a pretty recent change. She talked to our reporter, Mara Silvers.
And how long have you been a reporter for the Associated Press?
I have worked for the Associated Press for 2.5 months now, and that's about as long as I've lived in Montana.
Iris grew up in Israel, but most recently, she worked as a reporter in Alaska at a local newspaper, the Kodiak Daily Mirror. When she started that job, Iris knew next to nothing about the place, but she said the people there were really warm and welcoming.
There's this feeling of, you moved to Alaska, you're there for 5 minutes, and if you say, this is my home, then people accept that. No one's gonna doubt your level of Alaskan-ness by virtue of you being a newbie. In fact, they're gonna be excited to welcome you into the fold. Moving here, I thought, oh, it will likely be the same. But I sense a lot more like Montana is a bubble, and I have yet to be welcomed into the inside of this bubble. I'm kind of perched on the outside of it.
This feeling that Iris has about Montana, it came up after a few distinct experiences. She saw a lot of political ads slamming candidates who weren't born here. On Facebook, she saw hostile and suspicious comments about people considering moving to the state. And then, a few days before this interview, Iris encountered a lot of questions when she was on a hike near Red Lodge.
Someone asked me where I'm from, and I said, I currently live in Helena, because I figured what they were asking was, do you live in Montana or outside of Montana? And they said, oh, great, like, did you grow up in Helena? And I said, no, I moved here from Alaska. And they said, oh, wow, did you grow up in Alaska? And I said, no. But I felt like talking with this person I'd just met on the trail about the fact that I grew up in Israel seemed far less relevant than talking about my experience living in Helena for the past 2 months and living in Alaska for the year before that, because those are places that I've actively chosen to live in. It strikes me that many people would say that I'd have to work very, very hard to become a Montanan, and even then, I may never be one.
This tension about how long someone has been in Montana and whether they'll fit in, it's not limited to snarky Facebook comments or curious trail banter. When it comes to elections, it's a political tool. If you were born in Montana, you might tally up how many generations your family has lived here. If you move from somewhere else, you'll get plenty of side-eyed looks. The focus every election cycle on Montana authenticity might make voters laugh or roll their eyes, but it's just the surface layer of a complicated dynamic. It's a way to figure out who's trustworthy, who's actually acting in the public interest, and who doesn't belong. So when we say, we the people of Montana, who do we really mean? In our last episode, we talked about how Montana's constitutional preamble is guiding us through this season. Now, we're starting at the very beginning. We, the people of Montana.
We, the people of Montana.
Grateful to God for the quiet beauty of our state.
The grandeur of our mountains.
The vastness of our rolling plains.
And desiring to improve the quality of life.
Equality of opportunity.
And to secure the blessings of liberty.
For this and future generations.
To ordain and establish.
Do ordain and establish this Constitution.
I'm Sarah Aronson, and this is Shared State, a podcast about what's driving Montana's 2020 elections and where the outcomes could lead us. Montana Free Press editor Brad Tyer will take it from here.
Advertising isn't cheap, and attention spans are short. So when you're trying to win an election, it's good to give voters something sweet and simple, something that gives them a straightforward reason to vote for you.
I'm a fifth-generation Montanan, raising the sixth, and there's nothing I won't do to protect Montana's way of life.
Or to vote against your opponent.
Moderate? I don't think so. Steve Bullock is just another New York liberal in a Carhartt jacket.
One of the most effective ways to do that, or at least one of the most common, is to convince voters that the other candidate isn't one of us. They don't share our values. How could they? They're not from here. Anyone who's lived through a campaign cycle in Montana has probably picked up on this message. In 2018, State Auditor Matt Rosendale was running to unseat Montana Senator John Tester. And that's where Maryland Matt first came up as a line of attack. Rosendale had lived in Montana for 16 years by that point, but true, he was originally from Maryland, and he has the accent to prove it.
Citizens of Montana.
The people of Montana.
Citizens of Montana.
Citizens of Montana.
That's from a 2018 ad compiled by the Montana Democratic Party, an ad called Meet Maryland Matt that hammered the point home by using images of a crab, Maryland's official state crustacean. They even found footage of Corey Stapleton, who ran against Rosendale in a 2014 Republican primary, saying Rosendale's East Coast values aren't right for Montana.
We don't need somebody from the East Coast representing us in Montana. We need a Montana representing us on the East Coast.
Flash forward to 2020, and the patterns repeat. Rosendale is facing Democrat Kathleen Williams in the race for Congress. She's another longtime Montanan who, as it happens, was born in California. And it's not hard to see how each campaign is weaponizing its opponent's birth state. It's in their fundraising emails. Here's a line from the Williams campaign, sent on July 20th.
Maryland Matt is just too out of touch to ever be of service to the people he's supposed to represent. He's an out-of-state land developer who doesn't know our Montana way of life.
The Rosendale campaign is singing a similar tune, calling Williams California Kathleen and saying she'll always side with Nancy Pelosi. One of their recent emails put it this way.
Extreme Kathleen has given us every indication that she will be true to her San Francisco roots and will rubber stamp the radical policies of the liberal elite. California Kathleen won't stand for our shared Montana values.
Here's another wrinkle. They've both been elected before, multiple times, by Montanans. Williams served three terms in the State House of Representatives, and Rosendale served a term each in the House and then the Senate before being elected to his current job as state auditor. If anyone should know that you don't have to take your first breath in Montana to represent Montanans, it's these two. Full disclosure, I wasn't born in Montana. I'm a seventh generation Texan, and over a decade ago I began adopting Montana as my home, which is one of the reasons why I'm especially interested in this political tactic.
I think there's an undercurrent in Montana always of who is a true Montanan and who is an imposter.
Sally Mauch wasn't born in Montana either. She moved here from Kansas to Tiny Heron in the northwestern part of the state more than 40 years ago. Eventually, she landed in Missoula at Montana Public Radio, covering politics and culture and watching debates about identity play out in the public sphere.
It comes out in elections, of course, but I think it's always kind of been part of the Montana culture. Definitely, if you're a native Montanan, quote unquote, meaning born and bred here, that gives you a cachet that other Montanans can only aspire to.
I want to flag something Sally just said. Native Montanan. It's a term that gets thrown around a lot come campaign season, but it's not a very good one. It looks past all of the indigenous people who have lived here for centuries. Figuring out who was born here and who wasn't does matter to a lot of people. But as Sally pointed out, it doesn't really get to the heart of things. It's shorthand for an actual Montana value. Authenticity. Being who you are, instead of pretending to be someone you aren't.
You know, one of my favorite expressions in Montana captures, I think, the disdain for people who are not authentic. And that expression is, so-and-so is all hat and no cattle. If you want to be taken seriously by Montanans and be seen as someone who can be accepted in the state, as someone who can benefit the state, then, you know, if you have a hat, you should have some cattle.
The day after we recorded this interview, the Montana Democratic Party put out an email about the Rosendale-Williams race. The subject line says, Maryland Matt Rosendale. All hat, no cattle. And for the record, this is a common saying in Texas, too. Another state with a lot of pride and an ethos that doesn't look kindly on fakers. Because the flip side of authenticity is being deceptive. People wonder what your real motivations are, especially in a place like Montana, the treasure state.
Are they here to take advantage of us as Montanans? I think that's the undercurrent, and I think that's tied to our history of exploitation in the state. Like in Montana, an ethical hunter is someone who hunts for meat and is willing to hike 10 miles straight uphill to get a clean shot, right? And then there's the trophy hunter who hires a guide, flies in from Florida or somewhere, and and shoot something just to get something to hang on the wall. And I think that is the fear that Montanans have, is that we will become a state that trophy hunters take advantage of. And I mean that in a metaphorical sense, you know, that people will come and get a treasure from the state, from the treasure state, and take it away.
Historian Joseph Kinsey Howard popularized the idea of Montana as a resource colony, a place where value could be extracted, with the rewards going out of state to New York moguls and corporations registered in Delaware. Much of Montana's enormous 19th and 20th century copper wealth left the state that way. And political influence? That can be a kind of resource, too.
Someone who comes here to make a political name for themselves without having really paid anything to the state to get to that point, thinking that, you know, it's a small state population-wise, and if they have enough money, they can maybe buy an elective office. I think they're, in a sense, trophy hunting the state, and Montanans take a dim view of that.
It's hard to chronicle how long this litmus test has been going on in Montana politics. There doesn't seem to be a particular election when this strategy of casting suspicion on carpetbaggers started, but it has been with us a long, long time.
I remember that one of the things candidates, including me, when I was young, candidates would do is to hand out matchbooks. That was when almost everyone was smoking. And on the spine, the cover of the matchbook, it would often say Native Montanan.
This is Pat Williams, originally from Butte. Back in 1966, he was a candidate for the state legislature.
And I wondered why. Why is that the most important thing in your effort to get elected?
He went on to become Montana's longest-serving representative in Congress. Looking back, Williams can spot the contradictions in that Native Montanan rhetoric for a few reasons. For one thing, Butte is a town that built itself into a proud pillar of American industry, with the help of immigrants from across the country and around the world.
It seems to me that this thing about American values or Montana values or who's a native and who isn't, although understandable, I think that to some degree it's dangerous. And America certainly thought that when we entered World War II and fought against the notion raised by some Germans that in order to be a proper citizen, you had to be born as a German. You had to be white and blonde and blue-eyed. We fought a war about that, and thankfully we won it. So I've never been much for thinking about the importance of being native somewhere.
More important than being a birth certificate Montanan, Williams says, is what you do once you get here. And it's worth noting that some of the state's most iconically Montanan personalities aren't in fact born and bred Montanans, but they still embody ideals about who Montanans are.
The two examples that always come to my mind, Charlie Russell from St. Louis and Mike Mansfield, who was born in Hell's Kitchen, New York City.
Charlie Russell was one of the foremost painters of the American West. The museum dedicated to his work is in Great Falls, where he died in 1926. His giant mural of Lewis and Clark meeting the Flathead Indians presides over the House Chamber in the state capitol. And Mike Mansfield was the longest-serving Senate Majority Leader in American history. There's a statue of him and his wife Maureen in the state capitol, too.
Charlie Russell used to say, I'm not an artist, I'm an illustrator. I'm showing you yourself. I'm a mirror showing you yourself. Mike Mansfield, in interviews like this, Mike would say yep and nope so many times that it was hard to get an interview with him for more than about 4 minutes. He made brevity and being right to the point. He made that so popular that Montana was known for those type of responses, that type of talk or lack of talk. They both came here and they didn't adopt Montana values. They set them. They created them.
Clearly, there's room in the pantheon of Montana leaders for real Montanans who weren't born here. And as out-of-staters like me know, Montanans can be welcoming to outsiders who make an effort to get to know the state and earn its trust. But here's the thing about focusing on where a candidate was born or how many generations their family has lived here. If you stare at it too long, it starts to look more than a little absurd. Montana has only been a state for about 5 or 6 generations, and even a 4th-generation Montanan has a great-grandparent who came here from somewhere else. Where do you draw the line? And where do the other parts of your identity fit in? That's a question Denise Juno knew she needed to address in 2015 when she launched her campaign for the U.S. House of Representatives against Ryan Zinke. Do you happen to recall, or maybe could kind of repeat a version for us of how you introduced yourself in your race for the House to voters, what parts of your bio you emphasized and kind of how you put yourself out there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, people want to know who you are when you are running for office. And so, you know, I would say like my story takes me from Head Start to Harvard, from growing up on the Blackfeet Reservation to becoming a national education leader.
Juno is a descendant of the Blackfeet tribe, among others. Her family moved to Montana when she was 2, after she was born in Oakland. She went on to work in schools on the Blackfeet Reservation, earn degrees from Montana State, Harvard, and the University of Montana, and be elected to 2 terms as Montana's Superintendent of Public Instruction.
And it always was interesting to me about how politicians really played up the fact of how many generations they have been in Montana. And, you know, whether they homesteaded there or how they got there or whether they were born there, and how legitimate do you have to be in order to be running for office in the state.
And in that 2016 election, she decided to have a little fun undermining the idea of lineage as a measure of Montananess.
And so, you know, when on my Twitter handle, when I was running for office, I would put 54th generation. And it sort of started out just as a joke, sort of like, you know, of like, okay, if this is going to be a real thing and we are relying on the issue of how long somebody's been in the state in order to be a legitimate leader, then only Indigenous people should actually be in elected office if that is going to be the marker for that.
On the campaign trail, Juno said what Montana voters really want to know is that you understand them, that you care about the same things they care about, wherever you were born.
I don't really think the length of time you've been in Montana is the legitimate marker. The marker needs to be whether you understand what Montanans are going through, if you understand the values of public lands and you understand the values of tribal sovereignty and you understand, you know, those values that get to the heart of what our state really is about.
And the trouble with using birthplace or length of time in the state as a qualification isn't just who is or isn't included. It's who gets boxed out and the experience that gets boxed out with them.
I think that when you leave the state and go do work elsewhere, or you go to school elsewhere, or you move into the state and you have different experiences, that really is, you know, how the fabric of the states actually come together, is that we take all these experiences from people, blend them together, and sort of come up with what our state reflects and what we look like.
All sorts of identities can be used to define who belongs to a club and who's denied admission. When Juno ran for office as a woman and a Native American, her sexual orientation also came under scrutiny. All of that made the one of us or one of them dynamic even more complicated. Juno saw that as a good thing, a sort of teachable moment.
I was the first openly gay candidate to run for federal office in the state of Montana. You know, I think that really opens doors, and people have to really think about who is representing us, right? And they have to struggle with identity. I mean, we actually had to work with media about how they were going to talk about the race. You know, there were some stories that would carry, lesbian Denise Juno runs against former Navy SEAL Ryan Zinke. And it's sort of like, well, that's not really fair. But I'd also think every time somebody steps up into those positions and allows Montanans to think a little bit more about how they're navigating that and what that means to them and having to do some introspection. I mean, I think when we see, look across the country right now, that's what's required from all of us. How are we upholding the structures that we have always upheld, and who's been running the system?
Denise Juno eventually lost that race for the House. Later, she moved to Seattle, where she's now superintendent of public schools, and watching Montana's latest elections from afar. As we get closer to November, and I keep getting these campaign emails telling me not to trust outsiders, I can't help but wonder, how am I supposed to take that advice? Me and the roughly half of Montana adults who weren't lucky enough to be born here. But there's something else happening here. Why are campaigns so focused on dividing us into groups of insiders and outsiders? Almost 7% of us are Native American. 13% of us live below the poverty line. About half of us live in rural communities. And more than half of us live in cities. Instead of focusing on all the ways we could define who's not a real Montanan, why aren't candidates talking about all the different kinds of true Montanans there are? Because when the preamble to the state constitution starts off with, "We, the people of Montana," doesn't that include all of us? Whoever we are, however we got here, and wherever we may have been in the meantime?
Those are the questions we need to be thinking about. It's like, what do you mean? But when you say those words, who are you representing? And why does that matter above all, that that is the message that you're carrying? And so those are all great questions to ask politicians who are using that tagline.
Shared State is made by Montana Free Press, Montana Public Radio, and Yellowstone Public Radio. This episode was reported by Brad Tyre. We're produced by Mara Silvers and edited by Nick Mott. Editorial assistance comes from Brad Tyre, Nikki Ouellette, Corin Cates Carney, and John Adams. Shared State is going to be with you all the way up until the election. Tune in for our episode next week, Grateful to God, how religion is influencing policy in Montana, and what that means for the governor's race. I'm Sarah Aronson. Thanks for listening.